Welcome to Night Call, a production of iHeartRadio.
Because of the sensitive nature of this topic and to protect our guests from further harassment, some of the names will be bleeped out in the following segment about the housing crisis.
It's 3:15 a.m. in the bathroom of a bar in Amsterdam, and you're listening to Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I'm here in Los Angeles, and with me are
Molly Lambert and
Tess Lynch. Hello.
We've got a great show today, a hot pod. We've got two guests coming on later in the show, Jed Parriott and Theo Anderson from Streetwatch LA, to talk a little bit about the homelessness crisis in LA and recent violence against unhoused people. So stay tuned for that. It's a really good conversation. We were really glad to have them on. First things first, though, we got to talk about fascia blasting.
Fash blast. You should blast the fash.
Well, yeah,
blast
everyone should. Fash. We stand by fash blasting.
Yeah, we stand
blasting.
By fash.
But this was a email that came to us after, I guess it was sort of inspired by me
self-care.
Talking about my face massage, which I have to say, like, in the time since that, since I was into face massage, I did end up kind of bruising myself.
Oh, you went too far
in? Yeah, not visibly, but just enough where it was, like, sort of tender and uncomfortable.
And also then you're like, my skull is right under my face. Mm-hmm.
And you can also make yourself, like, No, we've established this. We've established
every time we talk about it. I just, like, I want to leave my body.
A skull is under a face.
A skull is under a face.
But it's like if you go in the crevices of your skull, it feel good, but it also feels like you're not.
Well,
supposed
and sometimes
to be
you
there.
Can
you're
get
supposed
you can
to go
inflame
there.
It, and you can also just get, like, break out because touching your face will make you break out. Anyway, I still enjoyed my time doing the face massage, but anyway, in response to that, we got an email from Amanda who says, "Re your facial massage discussion." I guess Ray. It's Ray. It's Ray.
Ray Garding.
Regarding. Well, it's Latin. Did you know that?
No.
Ray is Latin.
What?
Okay, we can discuss this later.
Mind-blowing facts on the Night Call
podcast.
It's
not short for regarding.
Regarding.
I think that's a common misconception.
Let's not find out.
Yeah.
Let's
leave it to chance.
It is. Anyway, yeah. I perform a very effective, albeit terribly named, method of myofascial release called fascia blasting. It uses a tool, parentheses, blaster, to essentially comb and remodel the connective tissue in your body. It increases blood flow, encourages lymphatic drainage, increases your ability to recover from muscle fatigue. It got popular because it also produces a reduction in cellulite appearance and improves skin tone. If you haven't looked into it yet, I highly recommend it. It's improved my quality of life, my posture, my skin and energy level. Thanks for reading. Not an ad. I just love this tool. I think this might be an ad, but it's okay. You're cool, Amanda.
Also, Emily was right. I just looked it up.
Thank you.
I can't prove it's Ray, but it says Latin in re, Latin for in the matter of.
Yep.
Wow.
It's Latin.
Thank you, Emily.
Okay, Amanda.
Hashtag it's Latin.
hashtag it's Latin. oh God, that reminds me of that horrible tweet about how they shouldn't speak languages other than English at the debate, and then, like, said E Pluribus Unum in the same tweet. That's hopefully old news by now.
I think I missed that one.
I never look at Twitter anymore.
You guys are just avoiding the really important stuff, which is talking about fascia.
No, okay. So Amanda with the fascia blaster. I just had to look this up. So I think you're being a little disingenuous. No offense, but the reason it became popular was, yes, it can, you know, some people report a reduction in cellulite, but also the Kardashians endorsed it.
It was a Kardashian fad.
It was Khloe. Yeah.
Did Gwyneth also endorse it?
I'm sure she did.
It seemed like a thing where they sent out a bunch of product to influencers and rich people to be like, check out this new thing. And then everybody promoted it. But if you look into the woman who invented it.
Ashley Black.
Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with the TV writer. Mm-hmm. It is a scam, seemingly.
Well, first thing I did, because I'd never really heard of flashablasting before, was I went to, as always, my resource for all things possibly scams that have to do with the body and face, realself.com.
I looked on Reddit.
Oh.
Nice.
I look at Real Self.
I look at skincare addiction on Reddit.
I love the skincare addiction Reddit.
Real Self tends to be, as much as it is sort of like a way for plastic surgeons and like dermatologists to advertise, it also tends to eventually kind of weed out some kind of truth about all these procedures. And like there's a percentage of like, because people report their experiences and say whether or not they had a good experience or not. So it's at 65% worth it right now. Mm. That's a little on the low side. It's on the damning end of things. Like Cool Sculpting, I think, has a lower worth it rating.
Cool Sculpting is just like they gave a new name to liposuction, right?
No, it's not.
Well, come on,
they're freezing you.
But it's the same.
Liposuction sucks the fat out.
Liposuction actually works.
Yeah,
and is like an actual way to. Treat like if you want to actually remove fat from your body, that's the only proven
Cool Sculpting
method
doesn't do. Actually work.
No,
you like pee out some like you lose some water weight. I think
there's also that one for your chin that I forget what called.
Kybella,
and it's like the kind that's
it's
more
like supposedly Cool freeze off your skin.
No, they don't freeze off your skin. Freeze your fat your that fat you cells. Supposedly don't want, and then it is like expelled by your body.
Okay,
as
anything
waste.
Like that where it's like, and then your body will either
flushes
absorb
it, away.
It yeah. or reabsorb it. Because I've seen that a lot about lip injections too.
Mm-hmm. It does. Well, that's just hyaluronic acid.
But apparently
right? hyaluronic acid.
I guess how people respond to lip injections totally just depends on random stuff having to do with themselves. And
well,
apparently
and
some
this,
people reabsorb it like immediately.
Yeah. No, everybody metabolizes it differently. Anyway, back to fascia blasting. The fascia blaster looks like five baby octopuses on a stick.
Yeah.
And apparently
but you
just
have
like,
to use it hard.
It looks,
I mean, that's the thing.
It looks like a green thresher.
Yeah.
For your leg.
Yeah. I had a thing that was not this, but it was sort of like this, that was just like such a pain to use. I never did. That was supposed to like reduce cellulite or whatever. I think I got it for free. And it was just, but it was like the same kind of concept. It was like these, like, it was hard plastic, but the nubs on it were soft, so you could just like kind of dig in there.
It's like a scalp brush.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
And I was saying, I know from personal experience, this does not work for me because I did it once accidentally with like a back massager tool.
Uh-huh.
Where I just was like, oh, my hip feels tight. I'm just going to like dig on this pressure point
all day long.
Till it makes a bruise. And then I realized that what I really needed was probably to stretch.
Yeah.
Stretching is good. Like even
dry brushing is good. Dry brushing improves circulation, doesn't like leave you bruised. The problem with fascia blasting is that if you're doing it as directed, you get these huge bruises. And then I was talking with like a bunch of my friends who are real deep into the self-care, and a lot of them were doing fascia blasting, and they said that it made them, after they started, it made them feel sick, like they had like a virus.
Oh, and they
and
probably
then they
thought
felt
that
better.
Was good.
They thought it was the toxins that were being stored somehow. I mean, it just
but
it
then you
didn't
have to
line
actually
up.
Like sweat that. I think you need to like go in a sauna then
but
after
like,
doing something like
even,
a fascia blaster.
Even with that, there's so little that we know about what's actually happening that it seems to me a little cockamamie to be like, I'm going to rub this thing all over my thighs, get bruises, and then I'm going to like sweat out whatever was in there. And
I believe
like,
in this stuff. I have
also,
to say.
If you believe in it, it feels like you probably get a little of the effects. If you think it's working, it's going to work.
But I think the thing with stuff like this where you're, you know, actually possibly doing damage to like tendons and muscles and stuff like that.
It's bad.
Well, I mean, there was a period of time during our tenure at Grantland during a certain store that I was working on where I was working so hard on it that I ended up having to go to the hospital because I couldn't move the right side of my body. And apparently this was all just from I had dislocated my right shoulder at one point. It wasn't dislocated then, but I had done it years ago. But like your muscles are never fully recover when you do that. And if you're not getting enough rest and enough sleep and just generally taking care of yourself, your muscles will start really complaining. And so I had that and I was like, I'm going to go do a really intense massage. And it was the worst idea. Oh, no. I came out like so in so much pain. So I think like there's this tendency to be like, oh, I have a problem. I'm going to like hit it. It's like the thing, if your computer isn't working, you like punch it.
I'm going to say also maybe being hunched over computers for like a full decade probably wasn't
not good for you.
For anyone.
Even though we know it wasn't the skull horns or whatever.
It's just for your spine.
It's just not good
like,
for you.
Like just talking about it, I'm just... Move your body. I think a lot of these things are trying to provide a quick fix for something that seems like it probably is a process. I think also anything that says it's going to get rid of cellulite to me just always pings the scamometer.
Guys, cellulite is not something you need to feel bad about or get rid of.
Don't feel bad about cellulite.
Let's free ourselves
Everybody
from that.
Everybody has it.
Yeah.
It's fun. And also, don't damage your nerve
ending. Did you say
it's fun? I said it's fine, but
it's just
actually,
dimples.
Demi Lovato just posted a photo with all her cellulite, and she said it's cellulite. She was trying to start.
Oh my God.
Start
BuzzFeed,
a new wave.
Really quick, BuzzFeed had an article in 2017 where the title is Women Say a Popular New Device to Get Rid of Cellulite Left Them Injured, and it's people talking about fascia blasting gone wrong. So if you do decide to fascia blast, which we're not saying don't, but just like look into it first, make sure you're prepared.
Yeah, and I want to say that I fully endorse foam rolling, a thing that I don't understand how it works at all, and it also works in some mysterious way involving your fascia.
I don't understand. I thought foam rolling was something different than it is. I thought it's when you lie on the foam noodle.
It is. Like,
and that's all it is?
But it's like you give yourself a massage. It's like a deep tissue massage, but you give it to yourself.
Do you
like
have to wiggle around?
Massage. You have to wiggle around.
I didn't even know about
that. It makes
you
feel like a cat. Yeah. It's the best. It's like masturbating your whole body is how...
That's such a good pitch.
That's how Mary H.K. Choi, by Mary H.K. Choi's new book, Permanent Record, that's how she described it. I was like, that's the best description of it.
It is.
It is just like if you do it for long enough, it releases endorphins, and there's just something about rolling around on the floor that like does feel really good. So we're not against all pseudoscience.
Just don't hurt yourself.
Stick. Yeah, if your octopus stick makes you feel good, like by all means, keep doing it. Just be safe. Don't bruise yourself. So we wanted to talk about the internet dust up of the week. Obviously there's a zillion internet dust ups every day, but this is one that like feels very specifically of a certain echelon of internet life that I feel like we all have. My favorite story of the year, my favorite phenomenon.
We're being sarcastic. She is not into it.
We have to talk about Nat and Caroline.
Nat and Caroline. Okay.
Unfortunately.
At this point, it will have been a couple weeks.
People will have processed.
Nat and Caroline just on
I like
the
how
off
we're calling
chance.
Her Nat instead of Natalie.
Yeah, Nat and Care.
Nat and Care.
But we should just say that we're referring to Caroline Calloway and Natalie Beach and their toxic friendship that exploded onto the cut.
I feel like now we're going to play a video clip.
And stay tuned while we watch them explode their friendship.
I mean, it does sound like there should be a go-to like clip reel from a reality show where it's like...
Yeah.
You said that you would write this and I don't know
Look,
what they would fight
can
over.
Picture the movie, which is why I think this was a smart move.
I can picture the movie and I am ready to take a nap.
Look, I'm just saying, if you're going to be trapped in a toxic friendship for a decade, use it to make
everything
something.
Everything is copy, I guess.
Can we do some background for people who might not? Because I actually, like, even though
I knew
it feels,
nothing about Caroline Calloway until this.
You didn't?
People, no. Okay, so Tess, you were like, the Caroline Calloway story is going to come out. I'm like, is she the lady who, like, had all the jars? Like, yeah. I can't, like, but I don't, I
wasn't following it.
I'm so ashamed. Well, I hadn't been following it forever, but I had heard tell. Someone I follow on Instagram had mentioned her a couple of months ago, just in an offhand way, and I clicked. And then I was like, this doesn't interest me, but it's the thing that did interest me was that she had so many followers, but the content did not seem to warrant it. And I was like, it seems like people I know are following this woman. Why? I can't understand. And then a couple of weeks ago, someone was like, oh, there's going to be this big story on The Cut, Caroline Calloway. So, of course, I just went to Caroline Calloway's page and went, like, back in time to basically the beginning of time.
Did you find Natalie?
No, well, I mean, Natalie.
No, because Natalie's not in the photographs. That's part of the issue.
But Natalie was mentioned, like, obviously, you know, the story broke. But for a couple, maybe like 2 weeks or something before that, Caroline had been alluding to Natalie, talking. Have you ever had a friendship that ended? Have you ever hurt someone in Amsterdam in a way that it couldn't be repaired? And I was like, what does she mean? And it totally worked on me. It built up this anticipation for something that I knew logically I didn't actually care about, but I was so desperate for something that was a low-stakes, yes, exciting that,
okay,
thing.
Okay, so Tess and I are the defense.
Yeah.
We're defending the Natalie and Caroline saga on the grounds that it was like a breath of fresh air, yes, in a horrible climate where it's very hot and everything is going to die. It was like, hey, remember the 2000s, mm-hmm, when you could just have like a long read?
This was 2013!
I know, but I'm saying, remember like long reads? Remember just like
Cronuts,
just like a petty drama
between
two people.
A lot of things that like gladly are not our priorities anymore.
Well, it reminded me of waiting for a season finale of a show before you had the ability to record it and watch it whenever or binge what you watched, because it was like you have no choice but to wait.
They made it a content event.
A content event. But also you didn't know when it was going to happen. You knew it was going to happen, but you didn't know. It wasn't 100%. Maybe Natalie was going to back out and not publish it. You didn't care what was in it. You just wanted to see if it was going to happen, when.
It's like Pennywise.
Exactly. Sure.
Guys, we can't lower our standards. No, here,
okay. I want to say also that I agree with Emily that the way that this type of content is like feminized, only published on women's interest sites, I totally am against that.
Me
I've
too.
Been rereading Peter Biskin's Easy Riders, Raging Bulls, and like every relationship between 70s directors is like a Caroline and Natalie relationship. They all are like frenemies, like jealous, but also like close, but petty and always plotting about how to get back at people. Men do that too. That is not a female behavior in any way.
Yeah.
I thought Natalie was like very self-aware about
what? Are you fucking kidding me?
No, I thought she was writing the story with the perspective of somebody who was like, I did some dumb shit in my early 20s.
Oh my God.
Well, wait, I forgot to explain what it was because I just said that it was
Let's just get the rundown.
Long
quick.
Story short, there's an Instagram influencer who became a scammer when she decided to have these like
this
workshops.
Is Caroline.
Caroline Calloway. She is like an upper middle class person.
No, she's rich.
Okay, fine. She's rich.
We found out her parents or great grandparents developed Sarasota, Florida.
Oh,
apparently.
Shit. You're right. Okay.
Because somebody
was
like, why does she have a real leopard skin coat? And that was the answer.
Yeah. So she became, and it turns out that like a lot of her popularity was fabricated. She bought followers and stuff. But she's like a rich person who ended up making a friend at NYU. And it was this really toxic friendship. Mostly Caroline was just treating this girl terribly, and she ended up having this girl whose name was Natalie Beach writing her Instagram captions, basically ghostwriting. And then Caroline
for free.
And then Caroline got a book deal with an advance, and she told Natalie that she would give Natalie 30% of this. And then Caroline like wouldn't flaked out on writing the book, so screwing Natalie over, and then
when did that happen? When did the book? Because that's all somewhat recent.
That's all somewhat recent.
Yes.
And I've also seen people arguing from Caroline's side saying, "Hey, this girl is like clearly having drug issues and like mental illness.
Yes.
How dare you like make it look like she just scammed you, because she didn't get the money herself either.
Yeah.
She just like didn't follow through.
And a bunch of the stuff that she did, you could argue, I mean, you're getting Natalie's side of the story because she published this in The Cut. But for instance, say you're in a bar in Amsterdam, which is the Instagram Amsterdam. You're there with a friend. The friend is like, I'm interested in the bartender. You can go home. And you do go home and you go to bed. Your friend is calling you. It's like maybe you're asleep. There's a lot of like detail in some of the things that
people
Caroline
were,
supposedly did to Natalie.
People
that
were
are like,
immediately picking holes in the story. Picking holes? Poking holes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of them. Fascia-blasting holes.
Fascia-blasting holes in the story about whether Natalie really worked at a pencil store. She did. It was proven. She worked at the pencil store on York.
The indignity of
the pencil community came out to...
Pencil store owners were like, Natalie never worked here. It wasn't our pencil store.
Said,
we're the only pencil store in New York.
No, but it wasn't. It's the one in like Soho. Or,
they said
Natalie.
They were like, she didn't work here. And people were like, see, she's lying. And then they were like, no, she worked at the one on York.
Yeah.
Longhand, I think it's called.
Oh, you really, shorthand. You did research.
Wait, but that's
when they said the pencil store, I was like, oh, the pencil store.
You mean in Highland?
Yes.
In Highland Park? But
yeah.
I thought she worked in, I thought it was in New York.
No, she moved here and got a job at the pencil store.
It's hard to keep track. There's so many locations
in this
story.
It's a goodbye to all that.
All of her... All of her quick name checking of her supposedly so undignified jobs that she had to take while Caroline was off traveling the world made me so mad.
Because she was like, I'll be an urban farmer or like a carpenter or something.
It's like they're all like totally like if you want to be a writer, people have fucking odd jobs. Get over yourself. Like, I don't know. I just like they weren't. It's like not like you're slinging hamburgers for minimum wage at McDonald's. Like you're working in an organic farm in Gowanus. Like you're fine. It's just like
a lot of shit talking about Gowanus.
Yeah.
I felt bad. I was like,
somebody
you don't need to
proved
disc
that that was a real job. That there is a job harvesting lettuce for Whole Foods.
Yeah.
I don't know if
it's
working
the,
for Whole Foods is very good.
That's true.
So
but, no, but they pay.
But they just cut healthcare for like a billion people.
But
2,
this was before they cut that,
before,
and
this was before they were owned by Amazon, probably.
Look.
So, I don't know. I'm just saying that I'm just like, she's trying to like paint this woe is me picture. And I'm like, you still like live in New York and you have like, you know, like fine jobs. Like, yeah. I don't know. And you're trying to be a writer. You're young and you're trying to be a writer. Like, what?
Caroline was snobby and a dick and made Natalie feel bad because Caroline was like, I'm living this lavish lifestyle.
But
Caroline was addicted to Adderall.
And Caroline didn't have that life at all. That was the whole
yes.
point, was that she went to visit her and she was like, I've been imagining that everything this person posts on Instagram is true and it's all made up and they're just living in their dorm ripping the carpet up on Adderall.
The ripping the carpet up was my favorite detail.
So weird.
I saw a lot of people be like, oh, anyone who's done Adderall can tell you about...
Is that true?
They were like, you know, doing Adderall, sometimes you just clean the house.
It's an amphetamine.
It's speed.
Yeah,
I
know.
We've all heard stories about how speed makes people clean the house.
Yeah.
It made me also be like, was I the only blogger not taking Adderall?
Right?
Probably.
But I did take, the only time I ever took it in my life was when I worked at a grocery store and it was like perfect for like stocking shelves.
Right.
You just, your brain doesn't work.
So here's my issue with the story. I have a few issues with the story. One, I think both main characters, including the narrator, are boring as paint.
Unreliable?
They're not unreliable in an interesting way. A lot of comparisons could be made with this story and with the Anna Delvey story, also because that was another Cut story that's probably, like, is going to be turned into a show or a movie. Shonda Rhimes has it. It's going to be a Netflix thing, I think. Anyway, somebody's going to make a lot of money off of that at the Cut. So, good job, everybody. But that, at least, you had a person who was like a character. Like the thing about Caroline Calloway is that she's like fundamentally quite boring, and she had to pay for her followers because there was nothing really that interesting or compelling or even just like aesthetically cool about what she was doing. Natalie did all of her photographs apparently, and they're shit. Like, she's bad at photographing things.
I think that was the arc that I thought was interesting, was that she thought she was helping build this brand, and then halfway through she found out it was all bought. Like, she hadn't built anything. She was just helping make content for somebody who was already like buying followers to what end?
Yeah.
Right.
But see, the other end of the story that I just don't, I'm frustrated with the amount of real estate that is taken among, and again, like among a very certain segment of the internet. Like, it might feel to us like everybody was talking about this story and was in past tense, because I think most people have already moved on, and they've definitely moved on by the time this episode is coming out.
There'll be five new developments.
Yeah. Sure. Then. But like,
they'll get back together.
But I don't know, like, when you have a story like this, and if you're doing, especially if it's like a personal essay or like, and it happened to me, like at this elevated New York media level, like, the question that an editor will ask is like, what does this story say about, like, what is the story talking about, and what does it have to say about that thing? And I truly don't find anything that this story, what I think the story is saying, to be interesting or untold at this point. This is the most told story about being a millennial woman, like, living in the internet economy or the social media economy. It is so overdone. Like, there have been so many movies and stories written by men about this, because nobody, like, everybody loves to tell a story about how women are fake and stupid on the internet, and like how being an influencer is like some kind of scam.
Well, that's what I'm saying too. I don't think it's a scam either. Like, when I saw what Caroline did, I was like, everybody does stuff like this.
Yeah. Well, except for the throwing the workshops and then not delivering the promised experience.
See, and so when that story happened, and like, that was just a news story, that was like the One Woman Fire Festival. Like,
yeah,
she's just, that's sort of interesting. Like, when that's just a news story,
like, she's low stakes. Like, the better story about a fraudulent convention was Tana Mongeau's, like, TanaCon, which was a big influencer YouTube one.
Oh, I do remember that.
It was a disaster. Mm-hmm. ButtCon. Did you guys read about ButtCon?
No, pardon.
Read about ButtCon on Jezebel. That's my favorite scammer story. It's about, I think her name is Mickey Agrabal, who founded Thinks, the period company that it turned out she was like harassing all her female employees. Mm-hmm. So she started a new company that's called like ButtCon.
Great.
Wow.
And she held a convention.
But wait, don't diss Thinks, because Thinks, the product, are great.
Well, somebody went to the convention and they were like, the like woman who was like the shamed influencer, she was like wearing just like a giant like butt around her head like all night.
Oh no.
And there was like a butt kissing booth. Just the whole thing seemed like this was her plan to like bring it back.
That woman's side hustle is the worst pizza place I have ever been to.
What is it?
In my entire life. It's called Wild. It's in Park Slope. It's a gluten-free pizza place.
Is the crust made of pads?
It might be.
It's very absorbent pizza.
No, but it's not, because it's really dry and doesn't seem
absorbent.
And actually, I don't think it would be that absorbent, because it's like a cracker.
The sauce is that weird blue liquid they use instead of blood.
It is. Like, I mean, it is like an oblong pizza.
Isn't it weird that period ads never show blood?
It is really weird.
No, that's like, I feel like that's something that we talked about when I was like doing ad studies as like a middle school gifted class program. Like, we had to like watch ads and analyze them, because everybody was really into like subliminal messaging and like average. Anyway.
And the message was women bleed mouthwash.
Women bleed.
Oh, it's Sting.
Cloud juice. Anyway.
Vape juice. Women secrete vape juice. That's why it's illegal.
It'll damage. It'll give you popcorn. Popcorn vagina.
Oh, speaking of which, check out our September book club pick.
Oh, yeah.
Smashed by Junji Ito.
We're going to have a book club podcast up soon for our Patreon subscribers. And if you go to patreon.com/nightcall, you can subscribe and get access to that episode and our past book club episode. So check it out.
Also, if you've ever been scammed, please give us a call.
Oh my God,
and tell
please.
Us about it.
Yeah. 240-46 night. We really want the scam story.
Emily's not sure
story.
How she feels about it, but
come on.
Tell us one so good that we'll all come around and agree.
No, I like scams. I'm just like, it's also like this thing that started with girls, where it's like all female friendships are fake, which is like, I understand the like impetus to do that, or to like do a counter narrative against like some kind of Friends Forever, like Babysitter's Club type female friendship narrative. But it's just like, at this point, it feels very old and very done.
Well, we were talking about that before the podcast, how none of us really related to like having a Caroline or being a Natalie or vice versa.
I relate to, I know what this friendship is, but this friendship is like overrepresented right now.
Well, yeah, it's overrepresented. Yeah. And also I think most people have like a glimpse of that, but it's very, it's rare to stay in that relationship.
I'm just telling you, John Milius and Paul Schrader had such a similar dynamic.
Yeah, that makes
John
sense.
John Milius is such a Caroline and Paul Schrader is such a Natalie.
But Paul Schrader is a better writer than Natalie.
Oh, Paul Schrader is the biggest scammer, actually, is what I learned from reading.
I love Paul Schrader. I know he's the worst.
Don't you come for Paul.
I know he's the worst, but
I'm just saying, let's take on male scammers the way that we take on female scammers. And let's take on the big scammers instead of just the rinky-dink ones. I think.
Speaking of.
Yes.
We are going to switch over to our interview real quick with Jed and Theo about the homelessness crisis in L.A., about some real scammers in L.A. who are just fucking up the city and in the name of business improvement and business development. So, yeah.
We'll be having them on after the break.
And now we are joined by our guests today, Theo Henderson and Jed Parriott from Streetwatch LA. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
Theo and Jed, you guys are both involved with Streetwatch LA, which is a group in Los Angeles that helps monitor the sweeps that the police do of homeless encampments. Theo, you are unhoused and live in Los Angeles.
That's correct.
We wanted to talk a little bit about sort of the way that the city of Los Angeles has been presenting the homelessness crisis and some of the invective people have been using. There was a fire a couple weeks ago in Eagle Rock, a big fire that turned out to be essentially like an act of terrorism towards a homeless encampment. The people who set the fire, one of them was named Daniel Noguera, who's a 25-year-old from Eagle Rock, who it turned out his father is the head of the Eagle Rock Chamber of Commerce.
That's correct.
Daniel Noguera, who has also been in the news for sort of refusing these bus lanes to come into Eagle Rock.
Exactly.
So we just wanted to talk about sort of the state LA is in. Jed, could you talk a little bit about Streetwatch LA?
Yeah, so Streetwatch LA is really like a network of people. You don't have to pay. It's not an official organization, but the work is volunteer-based, and it's a collaboration between – it started as a collaboration between members of DSA LA, the Democratic Socialists of America, and LA CAN, the LA Community Action Network, who for decades have been fighting for human rights in Skid Row, which is the homeless epicenter of the world, really, and the criminalization epicenter in that regard as well. I think Skid Row is the most police community per capita outside of Baghdad. I don't know if that still stands, but for a while.
That's true.
And Theo, you live downtown in another area.
I live in Chinatown, and as I personally have experienced of the increased harassment of the LAPD, neighborhood prosecutor and the business improvement district executive director. Initially, I had moved in Chinatown. I lived in Chinatown before the Great Recession. And due to life happening that I became unhoused due to illness and, you know, the rising cost of medical things that I had to do to survive, I became unhoused. And I had usually stayed in the other areas like Skid Row and Little Tokyo, but it became much more dangerous. It became a little more aggressive with the police, and I wanted somewhere that people knew me, and I had a sense of safety there. So their aim is to get me to make a mistake so they can make an issue that they can justify me staying out of the park.
Yeah, it seems like what we're really seeing is sort of the criminalization of poverty and of being unhoused.
Exactly.
And it's happening, obviously, at a structural level through things like the Business Improvement District.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of these things that came out of this Glendale fire story, was that there's like these two guys who set this fire are actually part of this sort of like a series of Facebook groups, like secret Facebook groups, where people are kind of coordinating these ways to attack and harass and otherwise terrorize unhoused people in Los Angeles. And so this was like basically, and there have been a lot of smaller examples of this, but this was kind of this became a fire that you could see across the city.
Yeah, I mean, like, this guy threw an M80 into a homeless encampment, and his $1 million bail was paid because his father was a rich person.
But it was also important to note that they blamed the unhoused for this encampment fire.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of backdoor conversations between a lot of these characters, city attorney's office, business improvement districts, chambers of commerce,
council members,
property owners.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say that the reason we need things like Streetwatch LA as a countermeasure to these kinds of vigilante groups, I mean, this is all so dystopian and nightmare. It is very much like the Purge movies. But it does feel like it's like they're telling us they're doing their job, but they're obviously doing a lot of semi-illegal to very illegal seeming things in order to make what they want happen.
It just feels very in keeping with like the general tenor of times right now, that like what once was just like NIMBYism, which has like a very kind of suburban-y sort of like, you know, mannered but bigoted type of like flavor to it, is now just actively like actual vigilante groups and people doing actual violence.
People are so dumb, they think that they could have save. I mean, I guess it's also Facebook's fault, obviously. It's all of these platforms' fault for having a place where you can have secret hate groups.
Well, they're not secret either. I mean, I'm in a neighborhood, so I run the Night Call Facebook, and I'm on Facebook. I would have left Facebook, but I'm on it. And
she's
I'm
the only one of us.
The only one. But I'm in neighborhood groups that are easy to join. They're by no means do you have to even prove that you live in the neighborhood. And on a daily basis, this is a topic of conversation where people will weigh in with, you know, really like as if they're trying to make a joke. There's no joke to be found about committing violent acts against homeless people, about making the streets inhospitable, about moving people away, but nobody says to where or how in a way that is so... You can just feel the animosity there, and it's extremely scary. And I think
it's so dehumanizing.
It's so dehumanizing. And beyond that, I mean, there are now apps like Citizen and Nextdoor.
Don't download Citizen.
Well, I mean, and the frustrating thing is that, you know, Molly recently gave a comment at City Council, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. But I'm a parent, and I remember I downloaded this Citizen app. There was a shooting near my son's school, and all I knew was that there was a shooting. It was on the radio, and eventually I downloaded Citizen because I'm very concerned about school shootings, and that was where the information was. But then in addition to that information, you have an onslaught of these, you know, and so many of them turn out to be false alarms, but it creates this sense of paranoia. And I think in LA especially, the blame often falls totally wrongfully on the unhoused.
Right. Yeah, so if we could talk a little bit about the business improvement district for a minute, because I think there's a lot of things that have these very insidiously sort of neutral sounding names.
Right. It's very Chinatownish.
Yeah.
Not Chinatown the film, but also Chinatown, actual Chinatown.
Could you explain what the business improvement district does?
The business improvement district is is in lockstep with the LAPD. The LAPD cannot do overtly illegal things because of lawsuits and criminal charges being brought to them. So they have dispatched the Business Improvement District employees to do their bidding and the respect for business owners and keeping property values up. And they will use code words of quality of life to do unhoused segregation to unhoused members. Now, there are a diversity of unhoused. There are the invisible unhoused, like I was, because I knew the vitriol of people out there that think all unhoused people are mentally addicted or mentally ill or in the grip of addiction, kind of addiction, or through some moral failing. When the unhoused do call the police, they do nothing. Right. They nudge each other, give each other a high five. And I had a friend of mine get attacked by one of the employees because he was following his wife. And they did nothing. They just, he's still working there. They still go to his meetings. They park right outside of his business.
I just wanted to add too, you know, on note of like unhoused folks trying to get the police to protect them from housed people.
Exactly.
For the past couple of years that I've been doing Street Watch in Echo Park, we've had numerous accounts of property owners showing up with a gun mm-hmm. and threatening people to yep. leave. Someone threw a boulder from their pickup truck at a tent. Thankfully, mm-hmm. no one was in the tent. But literally, I mean, that could have killed someone.
There was yeah. another thing in Eagle Rock also a couple years ago where some business owners put out lye on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. We documented that.
And again, it's like, that's the thing is we do have to document these things mm-hmm. and groups like Street Watch LA do have to be at these sweeps in order to make sure that they are conducted legally because often they are not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would suggest to, I mean, making sure that they're done legally. I mean, a lot of these laws are bullshit, are yeah. laws that we want to abolish, mm-hmm. that they use to do supposed what they call cleanups. They would take offense to the word sweep, the city, but that's exactly what they are. They are complaint-based, so a lot of them, right? So like homeowners, property owners will call in and mm-hmm. say, I want you to deal with this encampment over here. Get mm-hmm. rid of it.
Yeah.
And even if it's ADA compliant and there's no trash at all, they'll still make everyone move their stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which is really hard, especially for disabled folks.
Yeah.
It's brutal, and being there to document, it's not only to collect footage for potentially, you know, legal purposes, but in the moment, it's a form of harm reduction. They mm-hmm. see they're being watched. They might treat someone a little better than they would if we weren't there.
Yeah.
And raising yeah. awareness on social media, like you said.
Yeah.
Two weeks ago, I had one of the employees that had came onto my Twitter, actually has been stalking me for several months, and I didn't know her by just basically doing, she worked at Alpine Recreation Center. And this young lady has taken several months, along with some of the vitriol of the gossip of some of the parents that do not like unhoused people in the park, and that I have a connection or relationship tutoring kids or teaching them martial arts and things like that. So they got together and started to create some sinister accusations. She took it a step further and went looking for my public page, took some isolated pictures, and then tried to insinuate that there was some horrific things that I've done. And from this point on, it's like, and she's still employed there. She's, you know, there's nothing been done to her. They talked to her, but she's bold. She's, yeah. you know, and if I had the roles were reversed, I would have been arrested or at least disciplined or transferred.
Yeah, I think what is very insane about this too is that we live in Los Angeles, which really likes to present itself as being sort of a sanctuary.
Progressive.
Yeah.
Progressive. Yeah. And it is not, clearly. The mm-hmm. people that empower are not, haven't done anything to help the homelessness crisis, which has only gotten worse mm-hmm. and more severe with all of their supposed solutions, like doing, you know, these quote unquote cleanups. It really seems to me like they want to make this kind of superficial cleanup of the city, but they have no plan ever.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this is especially the case in Los Angeles, but it's true in any big city that has any kind of, you know.
Which is every big city.
Which is yeah. every big city in America. But, like, it's, you know, I think if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, this is, like, terrible, what does it have to do with me? It's like, if you live in one of these neighborhoods where people start to talk about, like, oh, we have nice things now. Like, my neighborhood is nice now. Like, that's your business improvement district. And there's, like, this is the way the sausage gets made. Like, obviously, it's nice to be able to have, like, new businesses and stuff in a neighborhood that has been underserved by that. But, like, oftentimes that comes at the cost of people who are just trying to live. And
often they yeah. push, I mean, in Chinatown, we've seen this especially with groups like Chinatown Citizens for Equitable Development is mm-hmm. another really great group who's been working for housing rights in Chinatown, because mm-hmm. in their effort to gentrify Chinatown, they have been pushing out everybody that yeah. lives in low-income housing mm-hmm. or rent-stabilized housing. The promise of, you know, making the place nice and providing yeah. services and community for the people who live there is always a false promise,
yeah.
because it's always about bringing in new
people,
richer, whiter people.
Right.
And the city is getting sued by CCED LA because they built this giant new development called the College Station mm-hmm. that was supposed to have just this bare minimum number of low-income units, and they failed to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one of the hugely frustrating things, and I think a point of contention for even people who would agree on most fundamental issues is that the developments that are being built promise a certain number of affordable units mm-hmm. and almost never deliver on those units. I live in on the border of Hollywood and Los Feliz. I've seen it now with two big developments. They promise a certain amount of low-income housing. They then ameliorate that. It's, oh, well, if you want it, we would have to build it too tall. And now we're going to build it a little bit smaller, and the number of units is going down. And I think that a lot of people would argue that the solution to this is to build more and that the market will adjust. And it's so impossible to argue.
There's a story this week about this thing, PodShare.
Oh, my God.
That everybody was furious about because it was essentially selling hostel bunk beds for $1,200 a month.
SROs for $12 yeah.
And a month. Yeah,
And all these developments too, even the ones that have low income, they're all majority market rate, which drives up rents everywhere and creates more homelessness.
Yeah. So low income, like what they consider low income, is so much money.
No, yeah. Exactly. That's a ton of money.
Yeah. It needs to be free.
We also need supportive housing, and I think that this is something like I heard that the Section 8 list is like years.
Mm-hmm. I'm on it, and it's 10 to 15 year waiting list.
Yes. Oh my God. So, good luck. And I mean, I have a friend who's in Section 8, and she was in a violent situation and had to leave, and she was so afraid that she couldn't find another place, and it was dealing with the bureaucracy was absolutely impossible. It gets people stuck in situations. Right.
Theo and Jed, could you tell us a little bit about what things you feel like the current unhoused population needs just right now?
I know I will speak for Chinatown, and I've been saying this, and it's been basically ignored. And if today, if someone says, well, we're going to get you off the street, what do you need? This is what I need. I don't need a shelter. I need affordable housing where I can be able to pay my rent with the benefits that I have. And I will need to have some supportive services in order if something happens to me, if I get sick or things like that, that I don't end up like where I began and on the street. That's part of the reason why I was on the street, because I had a choice between eating or high rent or I was scared to go to the doctor because God knows if they was going to tell me I need a new medication, how was I going to pay for it? Or, even though I'm now on Medi-Cal, but if I happen to work or get a part-time job, those real concerns. And, I don't have family to fall on because the oldest I have is 80 years old and she's in declining health. So, mm-hmm. Then they have families and responsibilities of their own. This is, life happens. It doesn't mean I'm a moral failure. Doesn't mean if I could work, I would have definitely worked, because who in the heck wants to be out here and be harassed? But there's the working unhoused that lives in their car at the end of the day. So that doesn't guarantee that I'm not going to be unhoused if I work.
Can we talk a little bit about the criminalization aspect of that, sleeping in cars and other things that are covered under 4118? Jed, could you explain 4118?
I would just say this issue is decades in the making. It's a result of the commodification of housing and healthcare and all these basic human needs. And our capitalist white supremacist system, the way to address it, as we've been talking about, is a cover-up, essentially, is to erase it with police
and try to solve it with more capitalism.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's all proven to fail. Criminalization's proven to fail. Capitalism is proven to just create more poverty and inequality. And so in the short term, yes, the criminalization policies must end. I mean, this is what we're pushing for. As Theo talks about, services that he needs before he gets housing, and then when you do eventually get the housing, which is going to take a while. Mm-hmm. And so immediately, another thing, I've talked to you, Theo, about getting a shower.
Mobile showers. Yeah. It's only one bathroom in Chinatown, and it opens up late. So if you have to relieve yourself, which they always complain about unhoused or using the bathroom, you have to go almost 2 miles to Starbucks pray it's open to be able to use the bathroom.
And that's what's so scary is that in the business improvement districts, which by the way, what business improvement district is a group of commercial property owners come together and say, we'll pay more taxes to the city to get more services, mm-hmm. and services to them is private security guards that go abuse their power. It's gentrification. It is like really... they talk about tenants. They talk about business tenants when they use the word tenant, mm-hmm. which is so effed up. So yeah. they don't really, or they're not looking out for the people who live in the communities. They're looking out for the people who are there to make money.
Right.
And they do not want any of these services that Theo's talking about. They do not want unhoused people to be present at all because it hurts their bottom line. And they have so much control right now, unfortunately.
I saw a crazy sign. Hollywood, they've also been doing a big sort of gentrification / harassing everybody constantly to try and make it touristy, and they had a sign up in a store that said, it was like put up by the business improvement district, and it said, if you see any like unsavory people, like mm-hmm. Please report them to the security guard. And I was like, you are just saying what you mean.
There was an extremely offensive sign in a restaurant in Chinatown that I used to go to, where it basically explicitly said, if you're homeless, please don't come in. Even if you have money to spend, we're not interested in your business.
Exactly.
And it was mind blowing, because it assumes everyone agrees with that sentiment.
Yeah, and one of the things people have been talking about in terms of 4118, which 4118 is a bill that would limit the unhoused in LA from sleeping anywhere near a school, anywhere near a public park, anywhere near a sports venue.
It's kind of an absurdist bill because it's just like it's a long-winded way of saying basically anywhere.
Yeah.
Because where are you not close to a park or a school or a venue?
Or driveway or doorway.
Yeah, a doorway. That's one of them.
And these are all the supposedly public spaces in Los Angeles, but it's clear that they're only public for some people.
But here is the criminal part about it. The criminality of it is not the unhoused people. It's our elected officials. Mm-hmm. It's LAPD. It's the city attorney. They are violating constitutional rights. I'm going to read that something that was said many years ago. We know through painful experience that freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Dr. King wrote that. Mm-hmm. He wrote that in the height of segregation and Jim Crow. And right now, we are in a new manifestation of Black codes, Jim Crow, in the same way, because they are criminalizing people of color that are unhoused, and they are making propaganda that states that all unhoused people are violent, mentally ill, and drug addicted.
And can you talk a little more about how it plays into racism, because and sort of the statistics about the unhoused community?
I say this, white supremacy tinges all of us. Everybody is impacted by white supremacy, even the whites that are not are trying to proliferate it. It's the fact that you can send out a propaganda message that state that unhoused people that you see are African-American, and on the news they're violent and such, that they see them and they can call the police and put them in jail. The park that I'm at most of the days, which is my constitutional right, school is near Castelar. They've created this such of a horrific narrative that the school has tried to ban me from getting employment at the school because they're afraid the parents would unenroll their child because they feel that I, because of my condition, I would be a danger to the children.
Can I actually throw it to Tess here for a minute to talk about, you had some good things to say about sort of the connection between schools.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wrote a letter that Molly read at the city council meeting about this bill, and I have two kids in school right now. They're in two different neighborhoods. They are both neighborhoods with large unhoused communities, as I would say every single neighborhood in Los Angeles has. Mm-hmm. And I think the difficult thing is that the people who send these, their kids to these schools, one of the schools is a public school, it's a free school. So it's very difficult because there will be a group of people who will speak as if everyone's on the same page. Our children should not see unhoused people. Now, you live in LA, you drive around, and you are going to see people of every income level, people with disabilities. We are really telling our kids that being poor is a crime, and it is not. I mean, it's
exactly.
It should go without saying, but it's very frustrating.
And you were saying also, it's like one in, what was the statistic about the number of kids in the
school? I will, without like outing anybody, I know for a fact that there are several children in my son's school who are not living, who are living unhoused. And their parents are sending them to a school. They had a choice of schools. They're involved parents. and it's not discussed because obviously, I mean, I think many people with good intentions wouldn't want to out these people, and many people would be put off by the school or treat the children differently.
Exactly.
But I mean, it's so frustrating because I feel like we have to talk to our kids starting from a young age about rejecting this sentiment that being poor is a crime and that being unhoused is a crime because our kids are in classrooms with children who are unhoused. And the idea that we start teaching them this early to treat those kids differently it's repulsive to me. I mean, it makes me very like emotional. No, I mean, and upset.
It's very important to talk about, and 4118 especially, to bring something in like this, to try and bring this bill in at this time, is so horrific and evil.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people at the meeting were referring to it as a new form of apartheid. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely agree. The unhoused community is overwhelmingly made up of people of color. And in Los Angeles, it is.
I would just say, so in LA, 9% of the population roughly is African American, mm-hmm. but 40% of the homeless population is African American, just to give you an idea. And 4118, by the way, it's an old law, a municipal code. 4118D specifically used to say you can't sit, sleep, or lie on the sidewalk, or it does say that right now. Judges have, over the years, come out, federal judges, and said that's unconstitutional. Unless there's a shelter bed or housing available, you can't punish someone for sleeping on the street.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And recently, another judge said that. It's a case, Martin versus Boise, the city of Boise, Idaho. And so the city attorney decided recently, well, you know, we're going to address that. So we're going to amend 4118. And we're going to say, yes, it's legal to sleep on the sidewalk. We're just going to tell you where you can and can't. And that's where they think they're going to be able to get away with it, or they've thought there. Now they're hearing all of us, the community, coming out, and now we're starting to rethink this. But one of the big things they've added, aside from all the sidewalk restrictions, is 4118C, which is basically a stand your ground law. It says that you can be criminalized for talking to someone in a way that makes them feel threatened. And it actually says in there that if someone commits violence on you, for making them feel threatened, it's your fault.
What?
And so it basically allows people to become vigilantes, and it gives them the power to attack homeless people and say that they're attacking them because they were afraid of their life. So it is actually enabling violence.
And that's terrifying.
They've also been really ramping up this stuff on Fox News. I have been told that Trump is suddenly very interested in the homelessness crisis in California, and people were saying it's because there was a lot of violent anti-homeless rhetoric on Fox News recently, sort of also encouraging people to kind of take up vigilante violence against the poor.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about Trump coming to LA?
It's not positive, I can tell you that. Well, I'm disconcerted because but then I'm not surprised, because even though the Garcetti and the city mayor are not Republicans, they share his views, because they are enacting or weaponizing the police to do exactly what he's been saying.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and I would argue that the city has already been enacting Trumpian policies against the homeless, and they really want to be able to enforce 4118, which they can do if they get enough shelter beds. So I actually am worried that Trump is going to say, well, hey, what if I put up enough shelters? Then you could legally maybe enforce the old 4118.
Right. We all know how his buildings end up. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Theo and Jed. This was really great, and we'd love to have you guys back again sometime.
Yeah, thank you. Where can we find your guys' work and you know, support what you're doing online?
Well, for me, I'm on Facebook, and my Facebook name is Theodore, T-E-O-D-O-R-E, Henderson. And I have a support page, Theo Henderson's Support Committee. And I was looking for, and my Facebook is not showing up
now.
We'll
post a link to it.
Yeah, please.
On our page.
Yeah, and I have, for Theo Henderson, PayPal, if you want to reach in and help me out for some basic things.
Cool.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you. And check out streetwatchla.com if you're interested in that work. And I'd also say, on a policy side, because a lot of people will say that, oh, you guys are just against criminalization. You just say, well, what's the solution? I would recommend checking out servicesnotsweeps.com because that's a policy. That is a coalition of people that have come together and said, here's what you should be doing, and here's what you shouldn't be doing, right? Services, not sweeps. House keys, not handcuffs. It's another slogan. So, servicesnotsweeps.com. Check that out.
Cool. Thanks
so much.
Thank you
guys so much.
Thank you.
That is it for Night Call this week. Thanks so much to Jed and Theo for coming by, and thank you all for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at Night Call Pod, Facebook at Night Call Podcast, and Instagram at Night Call Podcast. And again, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nightcall and support the pod at any level that you wish.
And as always, you can give us a night call at 240-46-NIGHT.
Or you can email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Night Call is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.